This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics.
Consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today we're going to look back at the Idaho game. We'll look at the Jameis Winston case. We'll look ahead to the game against the University of Florida coming up this weekend. And we'll look ahead just briefly to the postseason. All right, let's go ahead to segment one. Looking back at the Idaho game, despite scoring 80 points, this was not an especially sharp performance from Florida State. That said, it's not that surprising given that this was the game before Florida, the game before the rivalry week. My guess is that they didn't spend a whole lot of time preparing for Idaho in this game. They didn't spend a whole lot of time really pushing these guys the way that they have up to this point. You know, they're bound to for a little bit of a letdown. And if you're going to have a letdown, an 80-14 win is the kind of letdown that you want. So, you know, all things have to be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt here, but bottom line is that we still didn't see as sharp a performance from FSU as what we've become accustomed to seeing over the course of this season. In particular, the secondary had a few busts that Idaho just wasn't good enough to take advantage of. They had some guys running free, in particular on some over routes and attacking across the middle in a few cases. A couple of them were just flat dropped, and a couple others were poor throws. But the throws were there. There were some spots where they had the chance to make a few plays, and against a top level team, those plays would have really gouged Florida State. So that's something that I'm sure this week has been a subject of a good bit of work during practice and during film session. It's not the sort of thing you don't spend a lot of time working through the various pattern reads that you need to know for Idaho. You're not working on making sure that you know everything perfectly for them. You just go. They just went out and they ran their basic vanilla coverages, without a whole lot of the kind of extra work that you're going to put in against a team like a Florida or basically the rest of the schedule. So my assumption is that some of it just boils down to that. But either way, that you know this is there are a few things that still in post-game analysis and these sorts of things, when you know you may not prepare the same with exactly the same going forward, you still can use the tape a little bit to highlight a few of those busts and the way that you know technique should change or different things moving forward. So the bottom line is that you know they do need to get a little bit better. They need to execute a little bit better in the secondary compared to what they did, just to make sure that space isn't there against a team like Florida, where you've got a guy like Solomon Patton who's fast enough to take something like that to the house. So, bottom line is on defense that they could be just a little bit more precise and a little bit more focused than they were against Idaho, and you especially saw that with the first early score that actually beat Florida State's first team defense, something that Syracuse and several other teams this fall haven't been able to do. I mean, that's the first touchdown that the first team defense had given up in quite a while. But the other thing is on the offensive side, the passing game also wasn't especially sharp. Winston definitely had some misses. He was certainly not as sharp as he's been. There were some open throws that he just flat missed. There were a few protection breakdowns, a couple of which were actually on Winston as well for holding the ball a little too long and not getting it out to his secondary read or to the hot. So you know, there were definitely some pieces that are going to be worked on over the course of the week on that, because I mean, as far as the offense is concerned, yeah, they ran their most vanilla stuff, but you still have to execute that stuff, and there are some places where they just didn't execute quite as well as they should have. And you know, it obviously didn't matter. They scored 42 points in the first half, but you know, against better competition, it will matter. So you got to think that if you're Jimbo Fisher again, you're gonna going to focus on tightening some of those things up over the course of the week and making sure that Winston's attention is on the field here. I don't think that that focus and attention is really going to be a problem against a rival like Florida, but you still have to make sure that that over the course of the week that some of those little breakdowns aren't there. I also think that some of what we saw was a little bit of the result of knowing what they could do whatever they wanted, and we've seen that from Winston so far this year, that there are times when Florida State's not playing the best competition, that sometimes he doesn't always take exactly what's given, because he knows he can do whatever he wants. He knows his receivers can do whatever they want. So sometimes you see him pushing things to different guys, specific guys at a specific time. And it looked, especially early in this game, that like they were definitely trying to make sure that they got Kenny Shaw a 100-yard game, and really pushed it to Shaw, who is the senior here. Probably some of the calls in the huddle basically said, make sure you go to Shaw. So that may explain at least some of the difficulties of some of the sloppiness that we saw. That said, there's still going to be some things to work on as Winston needs to get back to the kind of automatic accuracy that he had early in the year. He just didn't look quite as in rhythm in this game as he has been. And obviously, given what's going on off the field, that's somewhat understandable. But you do need to see a bit more precision from the passing offense in particular. That said, the rushing offense couldn't have looked much better. It's scary when you go through Freeman and then Wilder, and then you get to the third back, and if you're the opposing team, you get to the third back, you usually are grateful that at least you're through the worst part. But all of a sudden you've got to deal with Carlos Williams, who may be the best running back on this team with the ball in his hands, at least. So he again continued to look like an absolute force. He's the kind of guy that that for next year in particular, or maybe in a national championship game, will be a huge, huge weapon. The kind of speed size combination that he has is just rare, and that again, it just showed out yet again, even against this kind of overmatched competition. It's just amazing to watch how light his feet are on the ground when a guy that size runs. One other thing that I should note is that early in the year, and right after the hires of the new staff this last year, I'd expressed some concern on Noel Digest about the hire of Randy Sanders. I just wasn't quite sold on that hire right away. And Jimbo Fisher, went out of his way earlier this week to talk about exactly how important Sanders has been, and gave him a lot of credit for a lot of the game planning and so on through the year, and basically said that Sanders has really made his job a lot easier, both by being a very good quarterback coach and by helping a lot in terms of the game planning. As it turns out, that also is validated by people inside the program who are saying that really Sanders is the guy on the offensive staff who has more than earned Jimbo Fisher's trust and his respect, because when they start the meetings at the beginning of the week, and Fisher is asking his staff for what they saw, what they think would be the best approach in the upcoming game. Sanders is the one guy who continually comes in and says, well, I think we should do this because they're going to be thinking this, they're going to try to take this away, and we should come out this way. And he usually has something to really work from. And that's been really, really important for this team this year, to have somebody that not only can interact with and call and challenge some of the things that Fisher may come in with, but also take some of the load initially off of Fisher to give some direction so that they, as a staff, can be unified and really work towards some good goals. So I have to say I was absolutely wrong in my initial concern and my initial not being sold on Randy Sanders as a hire. I think he may well be, aside from Jeremy Pruitt, he may well have been the best hire of this whole staff. And you can really see the results. You can see the difference with Sanders and his ability to work with Fisher and to talk Fisher's language and to continue to support Fisher on the offensive side with the kind of execution that you've had all year. And this is a better coordinated team. I mean, notwithstanding the quarterback position, this is a better coached and coordinated team on the offensive side of the ball than it was last year. And that's not because Jimbo Fisher became a better coordinator. That's not just because you have a better quarterback under center. There are some other factors here, and I think Randy Sanders taking that spot is a big piece. So let's go ahead and move on to the second segment, where we'll talk a little bit about the Jameis Winston case. Well, we've tried in general to avoid talking too much about this case because, quite frankly, it's just not something we've wanted to spend a lot of time on over at Noll Digest. We've interacted with it where we've had to, and we've certainly spent our time with it on the premium boards. But this is the first we've really wanted to address it. And, bottom line here is that there's very little concern. Really, there's no concern within the Florida State program that there's any real chance that that Willie Meggs will end up pressing charges here. And that's despite Meggs' record in the past of working with athletes. I mean, Meggs has gone on the record before saying that that athletes should be held to a higher standard, that athletes, it's even though it's more difficult to prosecute them in an athletics and Florida State crazy town, that it's important to hold them accountable if by nothing other than charging them and forcing them to have to go through the legal process when Meggs believes that they're guilty. So, in spite of Meggs' prior history, there's really no concern within the program that this will turn into any sort of charges, and I think so far what we've seen has more or less backed that up, despite a lot of noise coming from the complainant's side through her lawyer Patricia Carroll. There just has not been any real indication, anything beyond bluster that indicates, beyond the actual accusation itself, that indicates that there would be sufficient evidence to press charges here. At the end of the day, the fact that we've been waiting so long is a further indicator, I think, that that we're looking at more likely than not, in fact, very, very likely, that Winston never even gets charged here. Bottom line is that if there were sufficient evidence to press charges, and at this point you have quite a bit of evidence that's been gathered by the state attorney's office, if there were sufficient evidence to press charges, then Winston would already have been charged. The question here is really centers on the young lady's credibility, and I want to take very seriously. It's very important that we take seriously any accusation of sexual impropriety, in particular of rape or sexual assault. Those things need to be taken highly seriously, and actually, false reports are quite unlikely, precisely because of the way that this young lady and her family have been dragged through the mud on all sorts of message boards and all sorts of different places on Twitter. It's in a social media era, there's no such thing as rape shield laws, essentially. The media can continue, the large, mainstream media, as it were, can abide by rape shield laws and things like that. But you can't control things like Twitter and message boards and so on. And those sorts of things have become exactly as the Tallahassee Police Department had warned, have become quite difficult for the accuser and her family to deal with. And actually, getting to that, There has been some suggestion that the Tallahassee Police Department basically was involved in a cover-up here, and by telling the accuser's attorney, according to the in the attorney's paraphrase, that Tallahassee is a big football town, and so you know she should be more hesitant to make this kind of accusation because you know the complainant will be raked over the coals. As a result, that's actually the responsibility of the police department. Anytime this kind of accusation is brought, anytime this kind of report is going to be filed, it's actually the police department's responsibility to make sure that the accuser actually will want to go through with the complaint. That's they're doing their job there to make sure that they let the accuser know that, you know, oftentimes, even if this is legitimate, oftentimes it's very difficult to get convictions and you've got to be ready to go through a very, very difficult process that may be really, really maybe worse for you than not even pressing the charge. We want to know whether or not you're really in this for the long haul. That's the sort of thing that the police generally have to do in this kind of case. And I'm sure that they did that. The lawyer Patricia Carroll has suggested that they did that and has sort of insinuated that implied a cover up. I'm not sure that that's exactly the case, but at any rate, aside from basically just accusation, aside from the repetition that this was rape, there really isn't any evidence. There isn't a whole lot of evidence to deal with here that the accusing side has brought to bear. I mean, you have the DNA evidence that does link Jameis Winston to the accuser, but according to Winston's defense, they've always maintained that sexual activity did occur. And that, you know, he has simply pointed to the two affidavits filed on Winston's behalf as witnesses that the act was indeed consensual. And that really is the key here. The question ultimately, if it comes down to just basically an accusation, if it comes down to a he said, she said, then witnesses are highly important. And you know, those sorts of things break the tie, as it were. And it stops being so much of a he said, she said when it becomes a he said, he said, and she said against she said. Those sorts of things, that changes things dramatically. Again, as I said before, if there were sufficient evidence at this point to press charges with any form any thought that there is a reasonable chance at a conviction, then Winston would already have been charged. The longer this goes on, the more that you're looking at the prosecution doesn't have sufficient evidence to charge, or they would have. And so the longer it goes, the more you have to recognize that they simply don't have enough to charge at this point. Now, I expect that the current delay, you know, they initially had said that they were hoping the case would have been wrapped up by Tuesday of this week, of the week prior to the Florida game. They were suggesting that they were hoping to wrap the case up by then. I suggest that the biggest reason for the delay is that they're waiting on digital records that have been subpoenaed. So things like social media, phone and text message records, those sorts of things. And the reason that they would need those sorts of things is, again, these are key to establishing which side is more credible in this sort of thing. And again, anytime you're dealing with a he said, she said type case where, you know, one side is claiming assault and the other side is claiming consensual sex, the ultimate thing is establishing which side is more credible. And so the sorts of things that you would be able to find from Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and you know, all sorts of different things, along with phone and text messages, those things would ultimately be able to help adjudicate which side actually is more credible. So again, the key here is that Willie Meggs, state attorney for the Tallahassee area, and his staff must feel that they have a reasonable chance at a conviction, or they cannot ethically bring charges. Now, again, like I said earlier, they don't need all possible information that could be gathered in the case before they press charges. All they need in order to press charges is enough to gain a reasonable chance at a conviction. And then they can continue after they've got that. Once they've charged, then they can continue to gather evidence while building the case. But if, on the other hand, they're more likely not to charge in this kind of case, because of the public nature of this case, they have to ensure that they have all the possible information if they choose not to charge Winston. The bottom line is that this is a real stinker of a case for somebody like Meggs to get, because they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. Essentially, they've got on the one hand, if they choose to charge him, then you've got all sorts of fans who are going to be upset at injustice, especially if Winston ends up getting off, they're going to feel like it was an unjust charge, that Winston was being dragged through the mud by yet another Willie Meggs goose chase. Or on the other hand, if he chooses not to charge Winston, you've got the concern that there's criticism that, the Tallahassee good old boy system is just giving another football player a pass. And again, as I said before, that's never been Meg's way. I mean, he's not Bill Cervone from down in the Gainesville area, who's always been loath to prosecute athletes, basically saying they already have it hard enough and, give them additional chances and these sorts of things. That's never been Meg's way. But at any rate, Meggs will here always want to make sure that he avoids any possible criticism that he's giving a football player a pass. So just because of the nature of the case, he's going to want to make sure that he has all possible information if he's not going to choose to charge Winston. So again, if you think about this, they don't need all the information to charge Winston, but they will want all the information to ultimately not to charge Winston. In that case, the longer this case gets drawn out, the less likely we are to see charges come against Winston. So I think, again, based on the there are a number of things that have been swirling around, obviously, it doesn't seem likely that this was a sexual assault. It was an extremely poor decision, regardless, by Jameis Winston off the field here. And there are reports that Winston has done his share of moving and shaking in Tallahassee since he's arrived. But that's the sort of thing that ultimately you've got to be mature enough as an athlete, especially as your star rises. And of course, this was done well before his star had risen. I mean, he was a fourth string redshirt quarterback when this first happened. But as your star rises, I mean, just ask Johnny Manziel exactly how the extra attention can work. You do have to change the way if you're going to have lived this way before, you do have to change the way that you're going to handle yourself off the field as the attention gets drawn more on you because of your play and because of your excellence and because you're in the public eye. I mean, you're living in the fishbowl, and you have to be willing to change. And this is where, quite frankly, Winston himself said, go ahead and slap me upside the head if I start acting like Manziel. And this is a case where, it seems even before he made that statement that there was a little bit of Manziel in Winston here. And that's something that, again, if Manziel or if Winston is going to go forward and if he's going to learn from this, he has to learn that the sorts of things that you might be able to do as a standard college student, as just, average Joe who, is going around sowing his wild oats in college, you can't do. If you're Jameis Winston, if you're Johnny Manziel, without attracting a good amount of criticism, without attracting a lot of attention, there's just no way around that. So again, I think it's highly unlikely that we see any sort of charges, but it is the sort of thing that Winston and those around him, and really any football player, any athlete. And, it goes beyond athletes as well. Anyone can learn from this case in terms of the sort of behaviors that can really get you in trouble and are stupid, whether or not they're illegal. And that, I think, really encapsulates what, as far as I can tell, at this point, based on the little information that we have, is the case. So for those who, you know, their only concerns are, you know, Florida State, the fate of the Florida State football team, I first of all pity you, because I think that, you know, these other issues are actually much more important in the grand scheme of things. But secondly, I don't think that there's anything to worry about for Florida State as this case moves forward. It's just a matter of when it gets wrapped up, not how. All right, we're going to move ahead to the next segment when we'll look ahead to the Florida game. Looking ahead to the Florida game, it's just remarkable to see the state that the Florida program is in right now. I mean, we were less optimistic than most in the preseason about Florida's season coming into the year. We felt that they'd win somewhere around maybe 8 games on the year. We were more optimistic about Missouri coming back with all those players coming back from injury. We felt like Tennessee would be a little bit better actually than they've turned out. You know, the cross conference game with LSU, them playing Miami, these sorts of things. We felt like they might get worn down and have some trouble over the course of the season sustaining against the kind of teams, the kind of schedule that they had. But no one could have foreseen the kind of injuries that they've had to deal with and overall just getting worn down and decimated. I mean, they're just a decimated program at this point, and they've been beaten down all year. And you know, no one could have foreseen exactly what happened with them this year. You know, they've, in addition to losing their starting quarterback and his replacement, they've struggled mightily up front on offense. They've lost starting tackle Chaz Green. They lost some weeks back. They lost Tyler Moore, his backup, both of whom are gone for the year. Then they lost the other tackle, DJ Humphreys, for the Florida State game. So, you know, they don't have their starting tackles or one of the backups for this game. And that's with it. That's on an offensive line that's already struggled. And especially in pass protection, but they've already struggled. They're not a physical group. They're not a team that can really pound you. They've not been able to just run the football the way that Muschamp has wanted to do. They don't have the kind of backs to do that to begin with. But you know, it all starts up front, and they've struggled up front on offense all year. Now, you know, you would normally assume that at Florida, you're going to have the kind of skill talent on the perimeter that at least if you're struggling up front, that you can kind of equalize things out a little bit. You can even things out with having some speed and talent on the perimeter that's going to force you to pull a guy out of the box and that sort of thing. But they just don't. You know, Andre DeBose's injury early in the year in August was critical for this team. They just do not have anybody that scares you. I mean, they certainly have, you know, Solomon Patton has got some speed. You know, he can really run if you let him free in the open field. But, you know, he's 5'9", 177. He's not a big guy. You know, Quentin Dunbar doesn't scare anybody. Ahmad Fullwood, you know, he's a freshman. He's got some good potential for the future. But if you're relying on that guy, if you're relying on a 6'5 freshman to be your offense with Tyler Murphy or Skylar Morningweg as the quarterbacks making it, you know, trying to throw the football to him, you're going to run into some serious problems. You know, at this point, they basically are relying with having had the loss of Matt Jones as well. You know, their big physical running back. At this point, they're relying on guys like Trey Burton, who's been there for about a decade. They're relying on Trey Burton for plays, and they're relying on Kelvin Taylor, another freshman at running back, and again running behind an offensive line that's struggling. You know, Burton is a good player, and you know he's got a future in the NFL, but he's not a guy that's going to create a ton of big plays. He's not going to stretch the field for you, and they don't have those guys. You know, you can put the attention on Burton right now. You can force him to. You know, to be their offense, and still focus on him at this point, because they just don't have anybody else that scares you on offense. So given that coming into this game, there's no real reason to expect this team to be able to score any points really on this Florida State team. I mean, they're going to need some turnovers to have any chance of scoring points on this Florida State team. I mean, even back as far back as the Miami game, you know, that sort of showed exactly how offensively challenged they were early in the year, and that's before the injuries really kicked in. So, you know, this Florida State team is obviously significantly better than the Miami team that Florida played. And this Florida team, instead of developing over the course of the year like you know, I and a lot of other people expected them to do on the offensive side of the ball, they just continued to hemorrhage players. And they didn't get any better. They've not gotten better on the offensive side. They've gotten worse because they've just lost all those players. So, you know, it's going to be very difficult for them to score more than, say, 13, 17 points on Florida State. I mean, if they score two touchdowns in this game, it'll be because of turnovers, most likely. So, you know, that in itself makes this a very, very unlikely matchup to be competitive. And I didn't think I'd say that anytime soon in the Florida State-Florida game. But, you know, this matchup just doesn't have a whole lot of chance for them to score. And they, at the beginning of the season, they probably were the best defense I saw play early in the year. When they had Dominic Easley in the middle, they may have been the best defense in the country. They absolutely suffocated people. But this defense is completely different without Easley in the middle. And now they're down to four scholarship linebackers at that. So, I mean, they've lost players at just about every spot. And, you know, they still have arguably the best secondary in the country. I would say the best secondary not in Tallahassee. Luches Purifoy, Marcus Robertson, Vernon Hargreaves, Brian Poole, you've got four corners that can really play, all of which are around 5'11 or above. They can really play. They've got some weaknesses at the safety positions, but they're still a really, really good secondary, and they can give you trouble up front, or they can give you trouble at the wide receiver position because they can take away passing windows that you're used to having. The passing windows against Florida are much more like what you're getting against Florida State. Now the difference is you're doing it without the kind of pass rush that they had early in the year when they had Easley and they had healthy linebackers and they had, you know, these other players. Now, you know, if Ronald Powell is able to play in this game, you know, he's a guy that can give you some trouble in the pass rush. Dante Fowler Jr. is still one of the best defensive ends in the country, and he's going to be out there and healthy. So, you know, that's going to be a major point of emphasis, I'm sure, for Florida State over the course of this week, that they're going to need to make sure that they block Fowler. That Irving and Hart need to have good games in this game. I mean, probably the biggest concern actually coming in for Florida State is not whether they lose this game, it's what player they may lose due to a cheap shot or anything like that. I mean, is a guy like Fowler going to come off the edge and, you know, be able to and take, say, Jameis Winston, you know, in the legs? You know, do you have is there the possibility of there being an injury that could keep you from the kind of potential that you've got for after this game? So, you know, that's got to be the concern coming in from the Florida State side. But, you know, again, this defense, again, the Florida defense is still very good. And for Florida State, they're going to have to execute on offense. Certainly, they'll have to execute better than they did this week against Idaho in order to be successful. So there's no doubt about that this Florida defense is still one of the better defenses that Florida State will have played this year, despite the fact that they are not what they were. They're sort of a shell of what they were without Easley in the middle. And that actually should let, you know, FSU fans should think very hard about the impact that Timmy Jernigan has had in the middle of their defense. Great defenses start with great defensive tackles and corners. And Florida at this point still has very, very good corners. They've just lost their anchor in the middle. Florida State without Jernigan is not nearly the defense that they would be. Even though Florida State has very good defensive tackles other than Jernigan, Jernigan is the guy that, you know, in terms of splash plays and things like that, you really have to account for if you're an opposing defense or an opposing offense and opens things up for other guys. So, you know, that was Easley, and Easley really, and you know, you could make the case Easley was the best defensive tackle in the country. I think actually Aaron Donald from Pitt may have something to say about that. But at any rate, Easley was just a completely different kind of player in that on that defensive front. And I think Florida State, with the way that Florida's down to four scholarship linebackers and so on, and going against this kind of secondary, and in the situation where you may have some concern about a cheap shot and that sort of thing, the way to go in this game is probably to run the football a good bit. And see if you can just wear the Florida defense out and get out of there without too much of an injury risk. See if you can run the football, not worry about beating them by 40 or whatever. I don't think Florida State's going to win this game by 40 anyway. But, don't go out there with the aim of winning by 40 by throwing it all over the yard. You're going to give yourself more of a chance to turn the ball over. And really, Florida's only chance to win this game is if they force, four or five turnovers. So, what you got to do, I think, if you're Florida State, is to come into this game and maybe run it a little bit more than you have before against a depleted defense, against a depleted front seven, set up, some big plays in the passing game. And Florida, if they have had a weakness in the secondary, it's been against big receivers like what you saw from Missouri. Those guys have given, the Florida corners some trouble. But I think if I'm coming into this game, I'm wanting to run it a little bit more, maybe than I would have had Florida come into this game healthy. Because again, just like a couple of years ago in the Swamp, once you have a team that can't score on you, you get up and you just, there's no real reason to keep pressing if the turnover risk is there. So, keep pressing with the running game and keep pounding on them and keep working through that and be physical. But that would probably be my approach in this game. One other thing to think about in this game from the Florida State side, in terms of the health of the program at Florida, is just where Florida State was in 2011. So, you think about the kinds of injuries that Florida State had in 2011, and Florida may well have had a worse injury season this year than Florida State did in 2011. And 2 years later, Florida State is where they are. So, and the difference there is that had Florida State in 2011 played the schedule that Florida has played this year, they may well have been a three or four, four-win team as well. Probably, actually, I would guess probably about a six-win team. But rather than a 9-win team. But either way, that's the kind of difference that kind of rash of injuries when you're not an especially deep elite program. You have elite players, but you don't have the depth that say Florida State or Alabama do now. I think it's important to recognize that this Florida program is not, they may be down right now, but they're certainly not out. They're a team that, it's a program that within 2 years could be locked and loaded just like they were, in the recent past, once you start accounting for these kinds of injuries. At any rate, I think Florida State probably wins this game something like 38-10. I would guess probably actually they'll score more than 40, if for no other reason, just to make sure that they score more than 40. So, if I had to go on the record right now, I'd say something like 41 or 44-10. That kind of game is probably what to expect, because outside of Florida State turning it over a few times, I just don't see Florida moving the football well. I don't see them scoring points in this game. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to segment four, where we're going to look ahead to the preseason, and then we'll wrap it.
How did I beat you?
You're too fast.
Do you believe that my being stronger or faster has anything to do with my muscles in this place? You think that's air you're breathing now?
Okay, final segment. We're going to go ahead and look ahead to the postseason. And I still think it's more likely that Florida State winds up playing Virginia Tech than Duke. The main reason is that I'm not sure that Duke is going to beat North Carolina. I think that North Carolina is about 70% likely to win that game, whereas Virginia Tech is significantly more likely at this point to beat the dumpster fire that is the Virginia program than Duke is to beat North Carolina. Who's actually been playing quite well lately. So, if Duke loses that game and Virginia Tech wins their game, then Florida State will play Virginia Tech rather than Duke in the ACC title game. Either way, Florida State should be a wide favorite against either team. And there's no reason to think that Florida State can't win that game going away. Virginia Tech, I think, does pose more potential problems than Duke, primarily because their defense is of the sort that, they can take away take away a lot of what you want to do offensively. And in that sense, if you're looking for better preparation for the national title game, even though Duke beat Virginia Tech, I think Florida State fans would probably rather play Virginia Tech than Duke, because it gives the offense a really, really, really good defense to play against in the ACC title game as preparation for the national championship. Looking ahead to the national championship, sort of widening out to the national picture, everybody sort of penciled Alabama in, but, you know, in my view, Alabama still has a lot of meat left on that bone. They've got a lot left in the season. I think they'll beat Auburn. Auburn, it's sort of strength on strength, and I think Alabama's strength in terms of stopping the run is better than Auburn's ability to run the football. And Auburn doesn't throw the ball well enough downfield to I think, beat Alabama at the end of the day. That said, it should be a tough game. It's in Auburn. It's obviously a rivalry game. It's gonna be a passionate game. But I think it's probably more likely to look like the Florida State Miami game in terms of a rivalry game where you've got two very highly ranked teams that are coming into this game. But one that, ultimately beats the other down pretty good, rather than, an upset. I think that's more likely. That said, I think Alabama may have serious problems with Missouri in the ACC championship game. As I said earlier on a prior podcast, I think Missouri's receivers, and quarterback, James Franklin, now that he's back, their receivers and their quarterback, their passing game downfield can give Alabama real, very serious problems, similar to what, Alabama saw against Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M. Only Missouri actually has a legitimate defense. They've got a very physical and fast defense that's underrated. They've got a good defensive line. They're going to put pressure on you. Alabama would score its points, but I think that Missouri can run up and down the field with Alabama very much like what Georgia did with Alabama last year. So I think that Alabama, may still be, a little bit less than a 50% odds to make the national title game. They're probably more likely to lose one of these last two games than they are to win them both. It's certainly not a sure thing that Alabama winds up playing Florida State in the national title game. I mean, obviously Florida State isn't there either, but I think it's more likely that Florida State wins its last two than that they lose. I also think that Ohio State's going to have their hands full with Michigan State. I mean, Ohio State's given up a lot of points on the year. Michigan State's been getting better on defense, better on offense, and their defense is certainly very good. So, Ohio State's going to have their hands full with a very good Michigan State team. Certainly not an elite Michigan State team, but I'm not persuaded that Ohio State is an elite team either. So, I think it's very possible that Alabama and Ohio State actually drop one of their last two games, and possibly on the same day, in terms of the championship Saturday. So it could be very interesting with both teams going. If both teams do go down at that point, that could be a fascinating change in terms of everybody's expectations being dashed, where it would be Alabama, and if not Alabama, then Ohio State. And at that point, you'd most likely have a Florida State Missouri national championship game, which I think is that's a viable possibility, somewhere maybe a 1-4, 1-5 possibility that Florida State's playing Missouri, maybe a little better than that, actually maybe 1-3. And if, say, Alabama should happen to lose to Auburn this weekend, then you'd have Auburn against most likely Missouri in the SEC title game. And then if Ohio State lost to Michigan State, and maybe Missouri Missouri beat Auburn in the title game, then it could be very interesting at that point, because you could have a lot of one loss teams where Missouri wouldn't have beaten Alabama, and some people might want to put Alabama back in the national title game. So it could be very interesting. I do think those are your three teams, really: Alabama, Missouri, and Ohio State, that are most likely ultimately to make to be the other spot in the national title game. That, of course, is making the dangerous assumption that Florida State would actually would have no trouble in its last two games and manage to make the national title game. I do think Florida State matches up well across the board with any of those teams. Of the teams, I think Ohio State is the weakest of the three, and Florida State would probably do to Ohio State very similar to what Alabama did to Notre Dame last year. But you know, Alabama, of course, is I think the strongest of the team of those three when matching up with Florida State. So you know, that of course is still probably the best game on the board. It's just not clear they're going to get there. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap it. Again, thank you for listening as always. On behalf of the rest of the staff of Noel Digest, this is Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks for listening. I made this.